Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everybody. This presentation is based on previous work done at the Punjab Agricultural University and a further thought given to it. The environment of wheat, it was first reported in India in 1930, but it became important in agriculture in 1979 or so, and later on it was observed in and became important in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, Syria, Iran, Iraq, Nepal, and 1996 in USA. And most of the wheat importing countries, they have enforced the quarantine for this pathogen, so this has become a problem to the, or challenge to the grain industry throughout the world. You know that. The pathogen, Tritica indica or Nevosia indica, this is highly variable due to its heterothallic nature, and the disease expression is highly influenced by the environment. Keeping that in view, we developed recombinant inbred lines to study the genetics of resistance in the resistant cultivars. We crossed those resistant cultivars with the highly susceptible ones and used the recombinant inbred lines to study the genetics. And the genetic studies at the Punjab Agricultural University showed that either two or three major genes for resistance were there in the resistant genotypes. They were partial resistance genes, and they were having additive effect to give a complete or near-complete resistance. And another study by us at the Punjab Agricultural University showed that when we tested different genotypes of bread wheat, durum wheat, and triticale with different isolates of the pathogen, it showed a significant cultivar-into-isolate interaction, indicating that the gene-for-gene hypothesis holds good in this post-pathogen system. So this is a summary of the previous studies, and as many as 9 different major genes have been identified in Indian wheats which are resistant to this pest, and they are partial resistant genes. So for the sake of the present presentation and the discussion, we'll make some assumptions that there's no effect of the environment. Practically, it is highly influenced by environment, but to suggest some theoretical things and draw a conclusion from this, we'll assume that there is no effect of the environment. And let us start with the genotype, which has 2 major genes for partial resistance, and these 2 resistant genes have additive effect. So, in this case, if we have 2 genes for resistance in the host, and there's no variation on the pathogen side, so there, if all the 2 genes are present, both the genes are present, we get 100% resistance. And when one is present, 50%. And when none of this is present, 0% resistance or susceptibility. Now, in this case, previously we have considered that there's no variation on the pathogen side. Let us now assume that there is a variation on the pathogen side, that we have either 1 gene for virulence or both the genes for virulence, or at both the loci corresponding, assuming the gene for gene hypothesis, at both the loci we have corresponding alleles for A virulence. Now, one thing, let us now consider the literature on the biochemical basis of resistance in this pathogen. So it has been seen that the phenols like hydroquinone, they are accumulated when there's you inoculate or there's infection. And those induce lignification of the cell wall, so this may be one mechanism of resistance. So one of the genes may be representing that mechanism of resistance. Let us consider theoretically. And then it has also been observed that there was induction of enzymes like phenyl oxidase when there was a canal bud infection, and that results into the thickening of the cell wall, and that may be inducing resistance. What I'm trying to say is that there may be two different mechanisms of resistance, not like rust, that either there's a rust, there's a disease or no disease. Here, it is trying to reduce, it is trying to resist a pathogen, and one gene may be presenting one mechanism, other may be presenting other mechanism. It means that when the resistant genes, as far as the protein-protein interaction of Van der Planck, when one resistant gene is present and corresponding gene for Aerolis is present, the gene is recognized and you get resistance. So when both of these are present, we are getting 100% resistance. And when one is overcome, you get 50% resistance. And when both are overcome, you get no resistance. Now, let us assume that a cultivar has only one gene, only one mechanism is operating. So there, you will be getting 50% resistance. So here I want to wish to propose one thing, that because the situation in case of the Canalevant pathogen is that is highly variable. It's not going to be uniform, that either resistance and no resistance, either it's a complete avirulence or virulence. The frequencies are going to vary from 0% to 100% at a particular locus corresponding to a gene for resistance in the host. So another thing is that in case of Canalevant, we record the reaction by recording the percentage of the disease, right? So when we record a percentage of disease means we also take into consideration the extent of disease on each grain. Either no bunting, there are no bunt is there, or complete bunt is there, and of course the pericarp is intact, or intermediate situations. So we give a value of 0, 0.25, 0.5, 0.75, and 1. And we multiply it with the percentage of the infected grains to get the disease coefficient. And considering that, and also considering that in case of Canalevant, the infection is caused by the germination of secondary sporidia, which penetrate into the host through stomata on the spike. Now, let us assume that this is the situation. That frequency of virulence is 50% and frequency of avirulence is 50%, assuming gene for gene hypothesis, corresponding to the gene for resistance R2. Now, there is a secondary sporidia which is causing infection at one point on the spike, which is having corresponding gene for avirulence. In that case, we will be getting 50% resistance because only one mechanism is operating. So here I'm proposing that when the frequency of virulence is 50% and frequency of avirulence is 50%, so half of the sporidia, which will be causing disease at another point of the spike, penetrating through the stomata, will be of this kind, having the allele for virulence. So there we'll be getting full disease. So when we'll be calculating the overall disease on this that particular spike, it will be reduced from 50% by half to 25%. So as the frequency of the virulence allele will increase, the resistance will be reduced. So let us now consider both the LSI in the actual situation. So as the frequency of virulence and avirulence will increase at the both LSI, the resistance will be reduced. In this case, 0%, in this case, 100%. So this theoretical suggestion also explains that why when we are screening for resistance to Canalevant, we take up to 5% or less than 5% as resistant. It's not like rust that we get resistant at acceptable reaction, which I test with a single isolate because a single spore isolate is quite uniform. Here in the practical situation, in the Canalevant pathogen, there is a variability. So still there may be a small amount of virulence on the pathogen side. So that susceptibility, out of 50%, it will be 48, you will get 96% resistance. And in case of susceptible cultivar, because we don't have any gene for resistance, these genes for resistance are not recognized, that frequency of virulence will not matter. So that suggests that somehow this theoretical proposal is explaining this situation practically. So what it suggests? It suggests that for managing the canal bunt disease through disease resistance, we need to accumulate such genes for resistance using the molecular markers, and that may also help us to exploit the mechanism of allele effect. In fact, we did identify molecular markers linked to these genes, AFLP markers, some more markers in collaboration with the Kansas State University. And finally, I would say that to manage this disease through resistance, we need to pyramid the genes for partial resistance. Those, we have to find some way to identify those genes for partial resistance for which the correspondence frequency of virulence is quite low. And this will help us to exploit the allele effect because, you know, for the successful reproduction, there is a requirement of mating of two opposite mating types. And if the population is quite low, made low through the partial resistance, then we'll be exploiting this effect, and that will give you complete resistance. Thank you.
Here we have time for a couple of questions for our speaker.
Yes, please.
Is most of the resistance you've seen additive?
Pardon?
The genes for resistance, do they behave like additive genes? Do you see them persist over several generations?
Yes, there are genes which are, you know, the canal bunt is observed only at the adult stage. So they are like that one. I hope I got your question rightly. You see, yeah, okay. In this case, what we did is that, as I said, that we took the recombinant inbred lines, right? Because if you'll be using F2 and F3, is a high influence of environment. So we took the recombinant inbred lines, and where we said that there are two genes for major resistance with partial resistance, we got near complete resistance, complete susceptibility, and two intermediate types that helped us to indicate there are two major genes for partial resistance.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So before we go to the break, we have a 15-minute break, but there was no time to ask Alex Morganoff questions about UG99. So anybody has questions for Alex? Must have been very clear, Alex. Thank you very much. Okay.